Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Am I tough enough?
Strong and stable leadership.
Total rhubarb.
Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
Shut the fridge.
Not another one.
It's the Politics Show podcast.
Love podcasts, hate nonsense. The Politics Show podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Smattering of applause.
Golf clap.
On the green into delicious.
That's a bad miss.
And that's a bad miss. Ed Campbell.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Very well. Never been better.
Never?
Never.
That's good.
Apart from the smell in this studio. I'm well apart from that.
Yeah.
What's it smell like?
Fart.
Raw sewage. I think there might be a leak of some description in the
corridor.
Yeah,
I can smell a lot of paint, though. I thought that's what...
Someone's been farting paint in the studio.
Yeah.
Needs to be submitted to medical research. I've got a small amount of paint on my hands, but that's not
what's... You've been caught red-handed.
I would not
confess for that. That's the one time I wouldn't confess to having paint on my hands. You've been farting paint
on
wiping your arse
onto my
wiping your arse with your hands.
Do you normally have paint on your hands?
Depends what I've been up to at the weekend.
No, Ed, because he said it's the one time he wouldn't confess to having
In the one time if I have paint on my hands, I guess.
Right.
If someone had been accused of farting paint in the studio, I would not ever fess up to it.
Okay, cool.
The evidence is that.
Oh, like, your trousers are covered in it.
It's all over your chair.
You're like a spray can.
It does get stronger when you move, but that could be Ed.
The evidence is pointing this way.
People can't fart paint. I mean, this let's move on.
All right.
How are you, Ava?
Well, I've been better.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the smell.
Yeah. Why did you say it was so good? No, I said it was good.
Yeah.
Never mind.
You recently learned you can fart paint.
You said you've never been better. What's happened to you that's so good?
Getting to come to work with you guys every day.
That's nice.
Having discourse.
Oh my God, you've got an Apple Watch on.
I do.
Wait, what's that about?
I've decided that the trade-off for all of my data, like when I go to sleep, when I'm upset, when I fart paint.
When you're doing a Jackson Pollock.
And by that you mean hitting his wife. I get that, wasn't
it? I meant paint, to be clear. I meant farting paint, not the other thing.
And I want Apple to know that. No, it's just quite good, isn't it? Heart rate monitor.
Yeah.
So
they really do have a vice grip, Apple, don't they?
Vice-like grip.
Like, I agree, but equally, I understand the argument. You could just buy a Fitbit or something like that. It's just not sleek. It doesn't look as good. You can't get your text on it.
No. It's funny, actually. I've thought a lot about this. I haven't gone for a really, really long time. And I've even, like, on my phone, I've minimized it to the point where to use it as little as possible. We'll talk about this later on, actually, in the episode, right, when we talk about phones and schools. But, like, I have very few notifications on my phone as it is. I actually have a mode where a lot of the time I have it in grayscale, so there's no color, so to like not make me want to use it. And then when my Apple Watch arrived and I put it on, by default, all of your notifications, like all the ones I've turned off on my phone, they all come to the Apple Watch.
Oh!
Yeah, so it's literally like vibrating, like zzz, and yeah. I mean, I don't have vibrate on my phone. It's fully on silent anyway, so it's only when I look at it that I see
it. Just on your wrist now.
Yes.
So you, yeah.
Yeah, but I just get calls and texts to the what, to the wrist. Everything else is off. Yeah, straight to the wrist. Mm.
See you soon.
I hate that. Have you ever picked up you rang someone and they say, sorry, I'm just talking to you through my watch?
No, I haven't had that yet.
I don't think I've had that.
I hate that.
Do people walk around like this?
I'm going to out my friend Catherine. She does it all the time. I'm just, what did you say? I'm talking to you through the watch. Good. Take me off the watch.
Yeah, that's moronic, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Cut right.
I hope Catherine doesn't listen to the podcast.
I hope she does. Stop that. My flatmate, instead of manually putting a timer on his phone, says, Siri, set a timer for 20 seconds.
That's so disgusting.
Which it freaks me out. It's done it for years.
I pulled up, actually, near London Bridge. I pulled up on my bike next to someone, and the guy was going, hey, Siri. Hey, Siri. I was like, oh, that is so ick.
Yeah, that is fear-inducing.
Yeah.
There was a really good Corey, is it Dr. O? I don't know the guy's name. I've only ever seen his name written down, okay. So I don't know how to say it out loud, so forgive me, but he's a very good Substack, and he had a piece in the FT last weekend about the N-shitification, like, as in Anthropocene and shitification, like, type of platforms and their degradation. I'm going to do a really bad job of explaining it. I just encourage people to go and listen to it, but it was a fascinating insight into how, like, all of these social media platforms, not just social media, FANG, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google, etc., the way they like accrue users initially, and then as they try to extract value from those users, the service they provide just gets weaker and weaker, mm-hmm. and weaker and worse and worse, and that's why you feel like all of these things that used to be amazing and connect you to your friends and family and actually serve a purpose in your life no longer actually serve a purpose in your life, and if anything actually make your life actively worse.
Yeah.
Which I think probably the most explicit, although maybe that's not exactly what the case has happened with Twitter, right, that once upon a time it actually performed a function in your life, and now it kind of doesn't.
Yeah. It's just bad content, or just porn bots replying to everything.
Speak for yourself, my guy.
Porn bots reply to everything.
Oh, I just got charged for Amazon Prime. Speaking they were of, listening.
Don't forget who pays the bill.
Yeah.
There was a great porn bot, I think, replied to one of my tweets recently that said, a great porn bot.
Can I just ask, like, how, when you're ranking porn bots, what is it? What's so, like, sorry, the top? How, I mean, do they qualify as a great one?
So huge knockers. Number one. I mean,
no, because he actually, do you remember, he sent like a YouTube comment, one of our YouTube comments down, it might have been down,
oh, the chat group, bot.
That was from a porn bot.
Them,
yeah.
Oh, that one, yeah.
It was like the display pic was like a woman's butt.
Yeah.
But we know her. She's always the first to comment.
She's a real fan.
One of your favourite porn bots?
No, the number one is the person who replied to my tweet, Minjin Bio.
She should go to a doctor. That's not where her minge is meant to be.
Huge knockers, Minjin Bio. Huge knockers and Minjin Bio. That's going to click from Ed.
It's quite prudish to only, like, have the minge in bio, isn't it?
Is that not the least prudish thing to have?
No, because you can post minge straight to the timeline if you want to, can't you?
Coward.
Was that not just the front?
Just the front?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I need to
you can turn your laptop round and see the back.
I don't know.
Ed being like, no, I'm more of an ass guy, turning the laptop around. Why can't I see it?
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. How are we going to pivot to our first talking point out of this?
Well, actually, when it was announced, this policy, I can guarantee there would have been a lot of minges in bio underneath listed, wouldn't there? So, segue.
It's the Politics Show cast.
Shall we talk about some serious politics? Ava, why don't you get us kick-started? Let's talk about the Scottish Labour Conference. What's been going up on up the road?
It's always what's been going on, Ava, and not what's been going on with you.
In fairness, that's the premise of this podcast, I guess. It's what's been going on.
So
No. No. What is up with you?
No, nothing. I've actually...
Right. Been,
yeah. I actually quite like to talk about this.
Okay, well, the floor is yours.
I think I said it six times this morning, so yes. It'd be good for me to actually get on with it.
It would be, yeah. The opportunity's here. I've offered it up to you.
Yeah.
You can just start talking when you...
So, Scottish Labour Conference has been going on this weekend, and one of the first, well, big news lines that came out of it, only news line that came out of it, was that the conference had voted on a motion for an immediate ceasefire. Now, that was tricky because it would mean that the Scottish Labour position is now out of kilter with the main Westminster party, main Keir Starmer party. Now, Starmer went up to Glasgow and he gave a speech. And in that speech, he said that he would back a permanent ceasefire and he would like to see the fighting stop now. But he did not use the word immediate. And that's important because this Wednesday, the SNP will potentially lay a motion where they will call for an immediate ceasefire. And Labour are thought to be placing an amendment to that motion to get rid of immediate. So they say ceasefire at some point. That's where Labour are.
Okay. That's a shift in his position,
mm-hmm.
isn't it, Ed? Like, because as we know, from the start of the conflict, LBC, Nick Ferrari, he gets that interview, right? And he says Israel has the right to cut off water and electricity from Gaza.
Yep.
So from endorsing war crimes to to calling for an immediate
You're going to get some calls.
Yeah, I mean, it's a damn
scene. No, not immediate.
Sorry.
A big.
A ceasefire at some point, but a permanent one nonetheless.
Yeah.
That's a change.
Certainly is.
Well, it is a sea change. And some pundits are suggesting it's because they've been, it's in reaction to some internal polling that was conducted by the Labour Party that said that Muslim voters would no longer vote for Labour. I personally hate the idea that Muslims are a homogenous group that vote together. Like,
that's a really interesting thing, you know, because I know I'm taking this on a bit of a tangent, but briefly, you know how like in American politics, they'll often talk about like
the black vote.
How's the black vote?
Yeah.
Vote,
yeah.
Like, how are Cubans doing?
How are white women going to vote in the election? Mm. And there's, because obviously like you can break down voting into all these kind of different demographics, but we don't really do that here, do we? And it's kind of, it's like, I don't know whether it's a sort of a sensitivity about, you know, like you said, condensing people into homogenous sort of mm-hmm. blocks, or whether there is just something sort of, maybe the Americans are just a bit more brash about it and okay with talking about things.
It's because class is less of a signifier in America than it is here? Because people talk about like A1, B2,
I will homogenize the working class.
But I think people do like that. That's the signifier. People talk about like the Brexit vote.
Yeah.
White.
How dare you? How dare you ask me how Muslims are going to vote? Tell me how the working class will vote.
But it's also to do with density, isn't it? And where population is, right? The UK doesn't have a similar... this is less now than America, but if you went back 20, 30 years in America, you could find black people in the cities and white people not in the cities. And we don't really have that same sprawl.
Mm. So they've shifted.
Yeah.
They've changed their position, haven't they? And I wonder whether, okay, how do we look at this? Because on the one hand, I suppose he's shifted and just from like a pragmatic point of view, it should be welcomed that he's demanding a ceasefire.
Mm-hmm.
Does that negate his kind of complicity up to this point? I mean, do you remember that fucking vote in the Commons? People resigning from the shadow front bench over calling for a ceasefire.
Yeah.
What was it all for?
I think also as well, at what point before, like he should have come to this conclusion far beyond this. Like Gaza's destroyed, they're attacking Rafah. So is that your cutoff point? Like your moral cutoff point for a ceasefire is high.
What's the number?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's literally what it is, right? It's like, how long are you prepared for this to go on? How many women and children have to die before you say enough is enough?
Well, I think the argument that Labour would make is that they have stuck to the position of until the hostages are returned, there cannot be a ceasefire. and obviously the hostages have not been returned.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's holding out. That's just the Labour position. I'm just giving you the Labour position.
Yeah.
But I don't really buy this sort of electioneering line.
Right.
It's coming out of some pundits that it's all to do with he thinks he's going to lose certain by-elections or whatever.
What do you think it is?
I think that he sees that the US is softening.
Mm.
And I think that he's actually getting in line of to where the Tories are going to be in a couple of weeks' time.
Also,
I think he's lining himself up to be
Cameron's
mirror.
Cameron's been softening on it. As
yeah,
well.
He has.
And the British public as well.
So I think that his strategy is to sort of go like, whatever Rishi Sunak does, he has been mirroring it, right? He's been the copycat leader of the opposition, and this time he's sort of lining himself up so he can say, well, we've been saying it for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's been a majority position in Britain since the start of the conflict, so there should be a ceasefire. It's one of the really interesting and intriguing things that I think increasingly, and actually within like a broader political context, that maybe you can go back to something like the COVID lockdowns, when there was a relatively fringe group of people who had a position and it wasn't being reflected within media discourse, within political discourse, and so they sort of felt quite distanced and alienated from politics as a whole. Now, obviously those positions within COVID were slightly more radical and extreme than something like calling for a ceasefire in a war.
Do you mean like anti-lockdown people?
Is that something like that. I don't know. But there were people, anti-lockdown voices, but I don't know, just people who were, and as a result, they become alienated from politics, they become disenfranchised and distinct from it. Whereas now you have something that actually commands a majority position with the British public, i.e. calling for a ceasefire. But that's not reflected really in the media class,
mm-hmm.
certainly not in the political class.
Mm-hmm.
And that has very real and very serious consequences, right? Because particularly if you're, you know, mass demonstrations, hundreds of thousands of people on the street, you have conversations there and people saying things like, you know, why on earth is this position that clearly is popular, and the polling shows it, right? It's here. Laura's got it on the doc. 66% of Britons agree that Israel should call a ceasefire and are now less likely than they were in November to say that military action in Gaza is justified.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a political position that 66% of the British public agree with,
that's the biggest mandate. When has there been a bigger mandate for something?
Yeah. And you've got the leader of the opposition and the prime minister, whose expressed political positions was until recently,
yeah,
the opposite of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. A mandate has previously been quite important to our politics.
Famously.
If you remember the last, you know, 10 years.
And before, to be fair.
Yeah, and long.
Yeah, but I mean, have you ever heard the word mandate as much as, like, you know, why was that never the word of the year?
Oxford Dictionary.
One thing that's really bothering me that I find...
You ever had a mandate?
Hanging out with the boys? Yeah.
I've got one this week, Thursday.
Nice.
Link in bio.
Mandate in bio.
Manhole in bio.
What's my manhole?
Your bumhole.
Right.
Sorry, I thought that was... I didn't think that needed explaining, I'll be honest.
I just wanted to be, yeah.
There's an irritating thing going on in this room.
This right now.
an irritating tendency for vulgarity when trying to talk about the situation in Gaza. Yeah.
So commentators have been talking. So over the weekend, when the delegates at that conference voted for that motion, the reaction for a lot of pundits was to say how childish that was. And, oh, yeah, Israel's really going to stop bombing now because a little conference in Glasgow has voted for a ceasefire. And that line of thinking is like exploding my brain.
Mm.
Because is it not quite obvious that if you have the opposition pressuring the UK government to pressure Netanyahu, that might have some sort of outcome? And if you don't believe that chain works, then what's the point in Britain? Because we clearly have no place or power on the world stage whatsoever.
Mm, it's also the opposite. So the position you're talking about in Westminster with the leader of the opposition and the Prime Minister not being aligned with the British public, it's now the opposite in Scotland, as in, well, Anna Sarwar isn't the leader of the opposition, but Labour are polling second in Scottish elections. Hamza Youssef has been very vocal in his pro-Palestine position since the beginning of the conflict, and Anna Sarwar and Scottish Labour are aligned. And so Anna Sarwar could potentially be First Minister one day, and at that point, he has a position on an international stage and a mandate to pressure.
Well, they agree on so much else, you know.
this is the thing, though, right? Like, that line of... Okay, so let's take that. First of all, let's take follow the logic of that argument that you've just set there. Like, why? What does this have to do with anything? Like, you know, the political parties of the opposite position is not going to change what's happening in Israel, right? So, I don't know. You could take Ukraine and Putin, right? Is a good example, right? Whether or not Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak condemn Vladimir Putin's illegal invasion of Ukraine, it's not going to make him turn the tank. Oh, Keir Starmer said it. I'll turn the tanks around. That doesn't mean that you don't condemn it, right? Because it's just a fucking amoral. Like, what do you mean? It doesn't mean make it right.
Mm-hmm. So, and you all had your flags out. You all had your Ukraine flags out for weeks.
Yeah, you were happy to take a position on that, though you won't change it. But in this instance, it actually would make a difference because Keir Starmer, if the leader of the opposition adopts a political position, it inevitably pressures mm-hmm. the person opposite them and shines light onto where they are and the differences between their two positions. Secondly, you're right. Like, if international pressure is the way to bring about a change, right? That whether it's the military support that both Britain and the US provide to Israel, if you withdraw that, that changes things. The financial support that the United States provides, that changes things. You know, if Trump wins the next election and I don't think it would, but possibly if he does become so isolationist that he withdraws support for Israel, the war finishes, right? Mm-hmm. They need the money, they need the arms. So actually, yes, international pressure can change what's happening there. I mean, we want to talk about boycott the boycott with apartheid, right? That's international pressure. Yeah. Like, and it was a factor in the collapse of apartheid. And so people will make the same arguments around things like BDS, right? That with international pressure, you can actually change things on the ground in different places. It's just, I don't know.
Traditionally, it has worked like that. That's been quite a normal process.
Yeah.
We've all been used to.
I didn't expect the right-wing commentariat to come down on the side of
protest.
Yeah, our political system is ineffective, and participation, it will get you nowhere. Welcome to the anarchist struggle.
Power is a vacuum.
Yeah.
Life is chaos. Nothing means anything.
Mm. Well, that is true.
Nothing means anything.
I just fart paint.
It won't get better.
I hope when we clip that, we leave that bit in.
I fart paint.
Do you not?
What?
I was doing an impression of Ollie.
Oh, right.
Sorry, I was quoting Ollie.
No, not at work.
not for free.
I do the same thing. Link in bio.
We said have a Patreon, but it's just Ollie farting paint.
Have you seen Shane Gillis's YouTube sketch, OnlyFans Dad?
No.
we're going on a tangent, but basically, like, a daughter has her boyfriend around for dinner with the family for the first time. Everyone sat around the table apart from the dad, and you can just hear like groaning in like another room, and they're like, where's dad? I don't understand what's going on. They go in and it's Shane Gillis like riding a sex toy. Like, this is what I have to do to put a roof over your head.
Oh man.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Not another one.
It's the Politics Show cast.
There are ramifications within this Labour position, right? Because of a very important by-election coming up, Rochdale.
Yes.
Not least because how crazy was last week, right? You start the week, Labour is embroiled in an anti-Semitism row, disaffiliating themselves with their candidate in Rochdale, Azhar Ali. By the end of the week, two of the largest by-election victories in separate by-elections since the Second World War. Like, a week is a long time in politics, and your fortunes can rapidly change, right, from the start to the end. It was quite a roller coaster for the Labour Party last mm-hmm. week.
It's also interesting treating the Rochdale by-election as a microcosm of the entire country. As in Rochdale, well, if by the margin of victory in Wellingborough and Kingswood, they were always on course for that, and the Rochdale by-election had almost no impact on it, on the result for Labour. Mm.
The Rochdale had no impact. Yeah, yeah, I get that, but I don't think that it was. I think that it was. It was reform were the most interesting part. I mean, I would say that of those two. You know,
actually, those, they had.
Yeah, of those two by-elections, but for Labour, there was.
You should get an Apple Watch. You could have Richard Tice just up here telling you.
I don't need him. I've got him in my brain. There was, okay, again, the commentariat were talking about how people didn't understand what turnout means, because this was actually a really good result for Labour if you looked at the turnout, even though they only gained 104 votes in Wellingborough. Like, have you turnout? Like, have you looked at it? And personally, I thought it was interesting that voters aren't running out their doors to go to the ballot box to vote for Labour, right? Mm. They're not like rushing to go and vote for them. They're staying home, clearly, to not vote for the Tories, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's not, they haven't gained anything extra. The exact same number, pretty much, people who went in the general went for this time's by-election.
Because I know what you expect in seats like Wellingborough. It's not like there's like a hot liberal electorate willing to like rush out the door. It's just like there wasn't any decent right-wing option, bar your darlings in the Reform Party.
I think this is the problem, right, with all of these by-elections is, I think you look at, you're right, you analyse the, and it's kind of, you can't, it's impossible to make a direct comparison between a general election and a by-election, because a by-election will pull sort of like 38, 39, 40% right turnout, as opposed to a general election where you would hope for.
We've been getting mid-40s in Mid-Beds and Selstree. What's it? Ainstree.
Selby
and Ainstree.
Yes, we got there eventually.
And it's quite, like, it's apples and pears. But nonetheless, I sort of see and feel, it's not a groundswell of support. It's not like this massive political movement in favour of Keir Starmer. It's either Tory voters not turning out, their majority is often roughly the size of the amount of a vote that Reform are pulling in. And so I think you end up in a semi-extraordinary position where the Labour Party could win a 200-seat majority at the next election, but it's actually paper thin, really. It's reliant on Conservative voters being alienated, and within one electoral cycle, they could be won back round again. And all of a sudden, you know, at present, Keir Starmer needs a swing bigger than Blair in 97, right, to win an election. You could have this huge swing in favour of the Labour Party. They could have a massive majority. The Tories could be reduced to a rump, and within one electoral cycle, it could fly back in completely the other direction. It's the recipe for it is so volatile. Mm-hmm. The possible outcomes are pretty nuts. Pretty nuts.
Yeah. You'd be pretty pissed if you were the Lib Dems this time around, though, wouldn't you?
I'd be pissed if I was a Lib Dem, full stop.
Well, in both seats, Wellingborough and Kingswood, they got more combined than the Lib Dems and Greens.
Who did? Reform?
Yeah.
See that?
The choice really is Green or Reform. Mm, there's no...
You're shilling for the Green Party now as well.
Yeah.
But they didn't... I think in Wellingborough, Lib Dems hadn't gotten over 10% since, like, 15 years ago. It's not like a seat... I don't think it's a seat they do well in. I also think I'm going to... Should Reform not be doing better if they are the insurgent party on the right?
I hated when you put that in the chat on Friday.
Yeah, no, you did.
I actually tutted when you sent it through.
But, UKIP won by elections.
Can we just do a little reenactment of that moment, Ava?
Of me sending a message.
Ed's message has arrived. And can you? How did you react? What did you do?
Well, first I wept because he finally messaged me and I've been sitting all day hoping.
Validation.
Yeah. And then I saw what he said and I was sick in my hands. And then I clapped it all over my face. And then I rang Richard Tice.
You'll believe
it. Yeah.
He's undoing all my hard work.
Yeah.
But there was a really good video, I think it was from the Super Bowl, of an American football fan.
Richard Tice.
That.
Of an American football fan who's ginormous, huge, like, you know, enveloping a plastic seat. Mm-hmm. And he's so drunk. And he's just sat there with his hand in front of his face like this.
Oh, yeah.
Being sick. And so it's kind of like spurting
that
out
is
the sides
fucking disgusting.
And all over himself. And it keeps going and going and going. And he's like stained brown. And there's like a pool forming
that
underneath
him. That is rank.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that he needed an ambulance.
That's not a well
that
man.
That wasn't good.
So that was you on Friday when Ed sent you the message.
When I suggested that.
What did you suggest then?
I think Reform... Right, so Wellingborough is the type of seat that Reform would hope to be hoovering up votes in. They got 13%, which is only 3% more than they poll nationally.
It's the best they've done. They got like 13% in both, right?
It's the best they've done, but is it? It's not brilliant. It's not phenomenal.
You get 13% off of nothing.
In a Tory seat. What did Brexit poll there in 2019?
Did they run there?
That's a good question. No. I don't think they did.
They wouldn't, because it's a Tory seat.
If Reform are this insurgent right-wing party and you are not doing well in a place like Wellingborough, how well can you expect to be doing nationally? Councillor Tom Jones, friend of the podcast, described them as the party for golf club bores, and this might prove that.
They didn't.
Like, if you can't even appeal to the people who've had Peter Bone as their MP for however long, then... Are you making a compelling case to the electorate?
Can I just show you something? Because this is actually crazy when you look at the numbers.
This is something I got on WhatsApp from Richard Tice. Just a couple of days ago. No, go on.
They didn't run then. But in 2019, the Conservatives got Peter Bowen got 32,000 votes. Mm. Labour got 13,000 votes. Turnout was 64%. Right. This time around, when the turnout was 38%, Labour got exactly the same, 13,000 votes, and the Conservatives got 7,000 votes.
So, rough.
But
that's a collapse.
That is a hell of a collapse.
Yeah.
That's
big numbers.
I banned that word from myself.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to say extraordinary anymore.
I would call that extraordinary.
I came in here.
Would
one
you
day,
call it extraordinary?
Said extraordinary twice, and then he was just like, "What new word or something?"
Ava just found out what extraordinary means.
This is not ordinary.
Wow, how out of the ordinary.
You can that's a conjugal word? What do you mean?
It's two vowels back to back. How does that work?
Ed, come on. Be charitable.
That's her job.
Ed,
it's not my
join
job.
Ava and be charitable to Reform right now.
So I think we're allowed to be skeptical of Reform.
Polling 13% in an election is no mean feat.
It's not.
I don't think you can pull 13% in an election.
Well, no, because I'm not the fucking the saviour of the Tory right. I'm not Richard.
No,
Hayes.
But Ed, 2 months ago when they had their press conference in St James's Park, people were saying they're not even going to get their deposit back, and they did it twice. We got two deposits back, boys.
Because it was personal funds.
Stop making it every time I talk about Reform that I really like them, because it's getting ridiculous.
You can stop talking about them.
Yeah, but I can't.
No, come on, 13% is impressive. It is impressive.
I think it's, if you're polling 10% nationally and you're in a very, like, that demographic of seat with the political opinions of that constituency, is that to be expected? And would you not be disappointed that so the Tory voters did not want to vote for the Conservatives, and they didn't even see you as a viable option worth turning out for?
Well, half of the people who voted for the Tories did. They got a third of the Labour vote.
I think this
percentage wise.
This is the thing for them, is that most people won't have even heard of them, or know who they are, what they are as a political party. I think all of a sudden, when you're polling 10 or 13%, you're still you're in relatively fringe territory, right? You're in Lib Dem, Green. You're way off the pace, right, with Labour and the Tories. But when the Tories are polling 20%, your 10% all of a sudden looks incredibly relevant, doesn't it? And just because they're not winning by-elections doesn't mean that they are sort of irrelevant as an electoral force. 13% is significant.
But one thing I will back Ed on, that was their big candidate, Ben Habib, who was running in Wellingborough.
Mm.
After that, I don't know who they've got next.
Mm-hmm. It's Simon Danchuk.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Three.
And who's next to save the roof? Oh, no. Dickie, it's me, Ava. Get rid of Ben.
Do you think David Vance is free?
Just for people who aren't familiar with Simon Danchuk, They're actually, he's now one of the three former Labour members running in this election, right? But he was previously the MP for Rochdale in 2010 and 2015. He was suspended from the party for sexting a 17-year-old girl.
Love podcast hate nonsense. How does that work with your, like, ardent reformist?
You've endorsed every other reform candidate, Ava. Why have you said nothing about Sam and Danchuk?
I can't get hold of the... There's a candidate running on a single issue for this Rochdale by-election. Anti-grooming. And I can't get hold of him. None of his... He's got so many numbers and none of them work.
Do you remember that candidate?
Oh, the one in Hartlepool.
Was it Hartlepool?
Yeah, it was like a genuine sex offender.
Convicted sex offender.
Yeah, just running.
What was he running? Pro-sex offending?
No.
We didn't interview him in the end, did we?
No, we tried. Yeah. But seemingly he was like, oh, well, no surprises here. It was apparently extremely bad vibes. So I think we kind of nixed
it. I've got like an image of him being in like a cage. Like,
oh my God. Do you know, like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah. They're like the last candidate gets revealed and they just like pull up.
Genuine question. Don't accuse me of the thing you're going to accuse
Could
me of.
Could Sinn Féin win in Rochdale?
No, I'm not asking that question. The age of consent for sex is 16.
Mm. Yeah.
So is sexting a 17-year-old? Is that illegal?
I wonder if there was...
Just in bad taste.
Yes, it was a child. You can't sex children.
Because if you're over 18... The age gap means the age of consent law.
Well, he's also an MP, so he was in a position of power, wasn't he?
Mm. Like any adult should be sexing 17-year-olds.
So if you're 18 and you sex a 17-year-old, where do you stand on that?
Okay. There are nuances, I suppose.
Shades of grey.
You're going to get a really weird mix of people that come out and about, with what you've just said. There's like, when we talked about someone completely different and we said that they'd been texting someone under the age of 18, the number of people who wrote to me saying, what's wrong with that? I was 35 when I met my 14-year-old wife.
No, there's a lot wrong with that.
I can't help you, sir.
There's a lot explicitly wrong with that.
I think however old Simon Danchuk was, he's old enough to be a Labour MP. That's too old to be sexting a schoolgirl.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my line.
But at what point does he become too old? 19?
18 and a half.
So it's a limited
way. I remember there was a guy I was in halls with. Might listen to this podcast, I actually don't know. But in second year, so he'd gone through first year of university without a girlfriend.
Right.
New girlfriend in second year.
Oh, no.
It was a girl who was in sixth form from his hometown. And you're like, well, that's insane. She can't come to the pub. What are you talking about?
That's... Well, she can if she has a meal with her drink.
Like COVID, ordering Scotch eggs like it was COVID.
Imagine how many over 18-year-olds got away with bringing their child bride because everyone had to get a meal with their drink.
God's sake.
Is that what that was? Do you think that's... We could get quite a good...
It was a cover-up for paedophiles.
Yeah, we could get quite...
To help out.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't intended to help out. It was just...
No, that was Scotch egg. Grant Shapps Scotch egg.
Yeah. I'm going to say
substantial meals.
Substantial meals.
Substantial meals.
Having a pizza
Gate.
And 12 pints.
God, that pissed me off so much. Especially when they were like so arsy about it. They'd be like, no, you've had 3 pints.
You
need to order something else.
I never had anyone be arsy about it. I was only... I think the landlord was kind of like winking at you as you ordered your...
That never happens to me.
Beer. No?
No, that's just an Ed thing.
Yeah, he's been like more charming to people. Trying to get them on side.
Yeah.
So among,
then every pub was having... No one.
Among those candidates in Rochdale then...
Who do we want to win?
Yeah, who's your pick, Ed? Galloway. Azhar Ali, who said that Israel ignored...
Can we actually just not do any shade on them until I've actually been to Rochdale tomorrow? Because it would be really bad if they then listen to this before I get there. And then we can't do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who do you think? Listen, of all of... Okay, well, let's put it like this. Ava, of all of the Rochdale candidates, who do you think listens to the podcast?
Tony Lloyd.
He's dead.
I said what I said. Him and Diana listening to the podcast.
Oh, my God.
In heaven.
With Paddington Bear.
Yeah. Whipping Captain Tom to keep walking.
in his spa.
I hope that that's the distasteful comment that finally brings me down.
You said way worse.
So there's three former Labour candidates. Ali, Galloway and Danchuk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Scope of the Labour Party. It's a broad church.
It's a broad church.
It's a broad church.
You'd say it was a broad church. Not anymore.
Oh, no, I suppose. Narrow
all dissenting
church now.
Voices.
Yeah.
Dissenting. Right. I should be allowed to sex this child.
They've been purged.
Hang on, she's in maths now. She's busy. Sorry, she's in detention. Her phone was confiscated. Oh, that's why they're banning it. They're trying to stop MPs sexting school children. I get it.
That's a great segue.
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
I now understand it. It's rife, clearly, in Parliament still, of people with burner phones.
Should we swap seats with a segue like that to the next conversation topic? Do you want to come sit in the middle?
No, I think I quite like doing it once in a while. Segues are hard.
Are you growing your hair out?
Yeah.
Oh, tell me more.
Tell me more.
Yeah.
I get intensely bored with my hair every time. That's why I shaved it initially.
So fucking countercultural, isn't it? Boring.
So I thought it was quite stale, my buzz cut. And so I'm trying to grow it and see what happens.
When you cut it and grow it again, whenever I look at it, like when you come in the morning, it grows so much. It reminds me of like when I was 6 and I had cress.
Yeah. I get that.
Mm.
Yeah. I had a skin fade a week ago. I'd never hear.
Ideal world.
Mm-hmm.
What haircut do you have?
Ooh.
Like you're a Premier League footballer. You're taking to the pitch in the FA Cup final. What haircut do you want?
Why am I a footballer in this circumstance?
Just because they change their haircuts quite often.
Okay.
You don't have to be. You can reject. I didn't think you reject the trappings of
like
that.
Real like flow, like 80s flow kind of thing.
Oh, like a mane.
Like Brad Pitt with super long hair.
Like your old hair.
No, but my hair was. I didn't let my hair grow long enough. I got bored. And also was in a horrible in between stage. I also styled it dreadfully.
Alice band.
I didn't have an Alice band. You keep saying that. I didn't.
I'll pull up the
Ruben. It was Ruben. Ruben
wore an
Alice band.
You had an Alice band.
I did not have an Alice band.
I'm sure it would
have looked better had I had an Alice.
Do you know,
band.
He didn't. But what you did have was it parted and it sat quite well behind your ears, didn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
But then when it was longer, it was like, I should have, I'm so lazy when it comes to actually like styling my hair. And with hair like that, you actually probably have to style it. Whereas I would just let it dry and it would look awful.
Sounds like a real catch-22 for you that you're simultaneously bored to death of your haircuts. But that means you inevitably get haircuts that require more attention,
yeah.
which you don't want to provide them with.
Yeah, it's so difficult being me.
Were you with your girlfriend when you had the long hair?
I was, and then got my haircut like the next week.
Which way did she prefer it?
Too shorter.
For her to give an opinion, right?
Shorter.
It's like a week
preferred
in.
It shorter.
Yeah.
So
a week in.
Got to stay.
In the gradual sort of conquest of your life by your significant other, haircut... Domination of haircut is probably what, like 1 year in, 2 years in?
I don't think she's any domination of my haircut.
That will
to
count,
be honest.
That will count
really?
Time, my guy.
Oh no.
You're not getting bored of it. She's whispering it at night.
In point
of
my sleep.
Grow. Grow like cress.
Uh-huh. Grow like cress. I just got an egg with it. Do you grow cress and eggs? I made that up.
No, yeah. In what?
Yeah, you used to put them in loo
roll.
Leg shells.
I thought it was like a loo roll thing, wasn't it? Or no, it's like kitchen towel, wet piece of kitchen towel.
Yeah. To get the same purpose.
Yeah, but you put that, you didn't have the egg in there. You take the egg out and you just have the shell.
I'm looking forward to starting to germinate some of my seeds.
Mm.
Yeah.
Coming up, yeah, now it's getting warmer. My Cavalier Nero has had a resurgence, but it's bolting. It's run to seed because it's been so warm recently.
What's a Cavalier Nero?
It's like kale.
Oh, okay.
You know, Cavalier Nero?
I don't know that. No.
Really?
Never heard of it.
Never heard of that vegetable?
No. I'm sure you're right. I just have never heard of it.
I'll just show you a picture so you know what we're talking about. It helps, doesn't it?
Why not grow kale?
It's just like personal preference, really. I'm you know, take your pick.
What do you what looks dishes like do you put it in?
You seen that?
Oh, okay. Before? Yeah. I think yes. I've seen it written down.
Is that a new phone as well?
No, I just took it out of the case.
Someone
I just took it out of the case.
Well, he was back on LBC this week.
Yeah. He's got that broadcast money.
They actually pay him in cash.
As he leaves the building, so there can be no contractual connection to us after each broadcast. What was I going to say?
Something about phones?
No, sorry. Yeah, you're desperate for me to not talk about my germinating seed.
Oh, sorry. No.
No.
No. What else have we got cooking in the allotment?
I will start probably with lettuce, and I might also try and force some marigolds. Something that I got wrong last year was that I wasn't doing enough sort of collaborative planting.
Right.
I didn't have enough flowers in my garden to attract predators, so I had a bit of an aphid problem on my beans.
Oh, this is where the duck suggestion, yes. Duck and slug suggestion,
yes.
Came from.
Yes, exactly. You remember that conversation.
And so what you've been told is no duck, no slug, flowers.
Well, the insects that the marigolds will attract, they won't be able to do anything about the slugs, I suspect, unless I think parasitic wasps can fuck with slugs. But
oofed.
That's a problem, bringing all them wasps into your garden, isn't it?
Yeah, but anyway, so they will attract insects that will then eat the aphids that plague my crops, and also the garden will look nicer.
Yeah,
because we'll have flowers in it.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think you should do gardening content in your own. I've said this to you before. I think you should have your own gardening TikTok. You can be like Francis Bourgeois, but for gardening.
Maybe I'll do that.
Why don't you do it, but as thirst traps?
What, me?
You should wear
seeds
like
in bio.
You could wear dungarees with no shirt on underneath and
assless dungarees.
Yeah.
Bum poking out, marigold in it,
with like the flap on the back.
Yeah.
I at lunch I saw one of my mates, and he was telling me about, he was in Berlin and they were going to go to Berghain but didn't go to Berghain, but he had worn his outfit they went to dinner. And so I said to him, right, so you're going to Berghain, right? And I don't know, let's say you're going to wear assless chaps to Berghain. Are you just stood in the queue?
Bum out.
In assless chaps? Do you have like a big coat,
mm-hmm.
that you take off when you get there? How does it work? What do you do? Do you just leave your apartment in bondage gear?
Mm-hmm.
Not that, I know not everyone wears bondage gear, but you know. In for
helps.
A penny, in for a pound.
It
yeah,
helps.
When in Rome.
But suppose, like, what do you do in the UK? Like, if you're going to a bondage club, do you wear a disguise?
I think you'd wear a big coat.
Nothing else?
I think, you know, I'd want to say I feel regal enough to wear a fur coat. But then, I think people would look at me and go, that man is wearing a thong under that.
He's a gimp mask in hand.
Trench coat probably is what you're talking about.
No, but if you're wearing a coat over like tights, because I'm guessing like tights would be a part of that possibly. You would just look like you're wearing a normal outfit. It's fine.
See sometimes when I go to the gym in the morning and I wear shorts.
You shouldn't wear tights.
I don't wear tights very often. And if I did, that'd be fine. Anyway. 21st century, man. Come on. But if I go to the gym in the morning and I wear my big coat over it, because it's so long, and I sometimes wear shorts to the gym, and if I do it up, it looks like I'm just a flasher.
Flashing.
Which...
I thought we were being sex positive in the 21st century.
Oh, yeah. Flashing's not. It's a crime, Ollie. I think you should go and stand in fucking Rochdale, brother.
Yeah, that's good, that. That's good.
The pro-flashing party.
Do you think there are enough candidates in Rochdale to absolve us from a possible libel with you inferring that one or more of them maybe would flash?
Yeah, I think it's fine.
Yeah, okay, good.
I was referring to none of them.
You'd be a bit of a, you'd feel like a twat if you were the one who sued.
Well, this is obviously about me.
Yeah.
We all know I'm the most likely.
They've got like a WhatsApp group.
I did not get my right to reply.
Someone says, have you seen what they've been saying about you?
Total rhubarb. It's the Politics Show cast.
Ed, you've been up to some other bits and pieces, haven't you, Joe?
Yes.
You've been delving into the world of maxing.
Yes, I think it's for the end.
Right at the end?
I would think so.
Why?
Because it's a long segment.
How long is it?
Like 20 minutes.
Okay.
So I'll do phones first.
You want to do phones first?
I think phones first.
Well, Ed, you could have put it in there and then we could have come back to phones. We didn't have to sit here in silence for 20 minutes where it would go.
We don't understand how editing works. No.
Neither do the audience. They still think this is a green screen. I'm so sick of it.
Look, audience.
Do you want to hear something else funny? There's like a wild conspiracy about So when it was just Ed and I, and then like a couple of people kept coming in here to fiddle about in the cabinets, and like we had to stop and start a few times because we're like, who is that? And where it's been cut, you can just see the bit where we go like that and it cuts. And people are like, what the hell is going on there?
I am actually a fan of a really hard smash cut.
Yeah.
Where it's clear that something has just been removed from the episode. Like, don't even paper it with a camera angle change. It's just, we're here and then we're here.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I like it as well. Should we all swap seats?
I offered it to you earlier. You declined.
No, for a smash cut.
Your boyfriend does that a lot, doesn't he?
I don't know who your boyfriend is.
I don't follow.
Finn Taylor.
Ah, yes. Of course. Mobile phones?
Yes.
Gillian Keegan on the airwaves today, Ava, talking about issuing guidance to recommend that schools ban mobile phones during the school day.
Yes.
How do we feel about that?
So the new guidance will mean that teachers are allowed to go into pupils' backpacks to check if there is a phone in there, and it will advise that it goes into a locker the entire time. So it's very, very good guidance if you think that the problem of mobile phones can be stopped by just not having them altogether.
Or do they just keep them in their bags?
But then you've legally made it not your problem, which is very clever, isn't it? Because the schools are now like, it took place on the phone, we told you not to bring that here, bullying's not our problem.
It's so fucking stupid.
Yeah.
I hate this.
Oh, little Tilly is traumatised because she's seen someone being, you know, attacked on TikTok. Well, she shouldn't have had a phone.
She shouldn't have had her phone at school.
Yeah.
So I see this differently to you guys. Here we go.
Are you pro?
I think so, yeah. I think so. I'm anti banning 16-year-olds from having social media and smartphones. I think that's just ludicrous. But I think the strongest possible argument for it is to remove them from the school day. And I don't think you're going to stop bullying. I don't think you're going to stop, you know, all of that stuff. I'm not suggesting that it does. I think purely from a focus on your fucking lessons, be educated. I think it's a good thing to not have phones.
But they can do this anyway. There's no need for this announcement. Like, head teachers can just do that.
Well, yeah, they can, but I think it's sort of like almost like a bit of a catch-22, sort of empowering them. I know this because I went, I did a talk at my school and I chatted to a couple of the teachers about it, and they said they felt very conflicted because on one minute there'll be in a lesson like dishing a link out to students to be like, they'll survey the whole class, right? They'll ask a question and people answer it on their phones and they can say, oh, 50% of you said blah. And then the next minute, once he's finished that, and if someone still has their phone out, he then confiscates it and, you know, come and get it at the end of the day. They thought that it's like, on the one hand, a very useful classroom aid, and then on the other hand, a very negative thing in the classroom. And they felt like the direction it was going in was that they were going to be banning phones during the school day.
You see that some teachers were worried because they'd been getting filmed by pupils. That seems crazy.
Yeah.
To me, I see it as like drinking. Like drinking is going to be a part of your life whether you decide to consume alcohol or not when you turn 18, right?
Yep.
And if you've been around it and socialized with it before you're 18, you don't end up drunk in the ditch at Freshers.
Yeah.
Because you
didn't exercise
control. But you wouldn't recommend that they were doing tequilas during the school day.
See, that's where you're wrong.
Do you know what does need banning? Teachers on TikTok who film stuff during the day in their classroom winds me up. Like, they're just doing stuff for content. They're not like teaching. Do you ever see those? And it's never of the children. It's like front facing camera.
Damn it! Then I don't want to see it.
Rochdale. but they just like they're doing stuff for content, and they do like, it's like a call and response thing, and it's dumb. I think you should be concentrating on doing a lesson.
The kids who play Wordle, teachers who play Wordle with the class.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, guys, this feels like not the problem.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Well, TikTokers. You know, it's an addendum. They should ban that too. If the children can't piss about their phones, why are the teachers allowed to?
Yeah, look, fine.
Yeah?
No phones. I tell you what, that'll get a lot more buy-in from the pupils.
Teachers too.
Your teachers also will not have their phones.
Yeah,
yep.
I would back that. But then that's not fair on the teachers, I don't think. I think that you've got to learn to live alongside it, and I think it would be better for the government to be concentrated. So this is pie in the sky pipe dream, but like to be concentrating on trying to regulate big tech than to try and curtail it at the back end.
But then that's also the problem as well. It's like this government is fucking finished. and they're just announcing things. So there's something to talk about.
Yeah. But, you know, like, the problem with, like, what I didn't like this morning was Brianna Jai's mother was being used as the sort of focal point or the push
the
point. The peg hook
yeah.
for this news story. And she hadn't really said anything about it at all. She'd clearly been asked a question by a journalist that was like, do you think phones in schools are bad? And she said yes. And then that was the big headline. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think previously, before, not in relation to this, but she'd said that there should just be, that kids, there should be a ban, right? That kids
yeah,
should
but
be banned from
she's
accessing.
Grieving, what I mean is she's a grieving mother who's
totally
upset
agree.
About losing her child.
Yeah.
And instead, she's not a policymaker.
No, for sure. That's, no, that's exactly what I think. It's like, who can we go to for a reactionary response to this? Probably mm-hmm. someone whose daughter was murdered.
Yeah.
Do you think she'll mind about the Rishi stuff yeah. while we're there? Like, you know, sorry that Rishi said that thing. By the way, could you endorse his new no phone campaign?
It's also as well, like the people who killed Brianna Jai were accessing torture porn on the dark web. If they weren't in school, like being on your phone in school and being on normal social media was like, it was, I don't say it wasn't an issue, but being able to access, I think it's policy and lawmakers are so behind with what kids are actually using, can do on the internet. If you explained to Rishi Sunak what Tor was, you like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I heard a really good thing on, someone was being interviewed about it, and it's, Tor is, you know, the onion router, right? That's what it stands for, because it's like, the VPN moves you around constantly. Mm-hmm. An expert had been brought onto broadcast media, and they're like, so they use this thing called the Tor, and it's called Tor because it's like an onion. There's so many layers of secrecy. there's layers and layers of secrets. I don't think that's why it's called that. I think it's because it's got a multi-layered VPN.
Like an onion.
Yeah, but that was funny. Anyway, it's yeah, and also Red Rooms, right? There's a lot of chat. Oh, the girl who killed, was part of the two of them that killed Brianna. It was like, people were talking again, this is how far off sort of like the media discourse about this thing is, right? They were saying, oh, she accessed Red Rooms, right? She was accessing Red Rooms on the dark web. There has been no proven evidence that Red Rooms exist, right? That people live stream torture and murder mm-hmm. and that the audience can interact with it. It's never been proven to exist. It's like a repeatedly recurring urban myth.
I've looked.
I kind of have. I've done the research and I've also read about it. It's not real. Like there are Red Room websites on the dark web and virtually all of them are scams. They're like, you know, send me a Bitcoin and you'll get the link. Don't worry, it'll be super fucked up. Like, no. There was a really famous one where someone claimed that they'd taken a couple of ISIS fighters hostage. And then we're going to like feed them bacon and stuff. It was like
Jesus Christ.
The jihadi Red Room, right? And it was just a fucking scam. It's just like it's just there's a difference between a 16-year-old girl searching for Red Room content mm-hmm. on the dark web and it actually fucking existing.
I think torture porn certainly exists.
Oh no, it definitely does.
But not the live stream element.
No. Yeah. And I you might feel like I'm splitting hairs here, but is it really important? Because a Red Room is a specific thing. It is a specific thing. It's live streamed and it's the sort of the capacity to have input and direct what's happening. That's mm-hmm. a very different thing to watching snuff. You know, like those videos have existed and will exist forever. Like murder videos were on the internet before the dark web mm-hmm. dark web existed. And yeah. There's plenty of that stuff out there. I mean, there's fucking tons of child abuse on the dark web.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like one of the main reasons it exists, other than sort of like those illicit transactions for things like drugs and others, is that it's a place where a lot of child porn is hosted.
Mm-hmm.
But just because those horrible things are there, we have to be careful and specific with the language we use, because as far as anyone else is concerned, it's never been proven. There aren't Red Rooms out there.
Yeah.
Like it's not the same thing.
It needs to be accurate, and especially like if so many people are so unaware of the detail of it, it needs to be, well, they should have the truth, shouldn't they?
Mm.
About it.
Also, I think the judge even said it in the sentencing, the bloke, the boy who killed her, like he was transphobic.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah, 100%.
And literally the judge says he was motivated by transphobia. I think there's been a little bit of sort of selective engagement with that trial and what happened, and it might be a learning slightly the wrong lesson to be like, well, ban the phones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whilst the Prime Minister is making transphobic jokes.
Anyway, back to our debate.
Back to our next debate. Normalising transphobia. Good or bad?
Perverts wanted to use bathrooms. Thoughts?
They want gender neutral bathrooms so they can vape in them. These kids have gone mad.
I went into a gender neutral bathroom the other day and there was paint all over it.
Oh my God.
It.
And you're
See, the first time I used a gender neutral bathroom, it was at a club night in Edinburgh. And it was just like, they'd just labeled both gender bathrooms like all genders. And I walked in and there was like just lots of girls in there doing what girls do on nights out and just standing chatting. And it was, I was like, I went and got my friend to come with me because I was like, I feel like an absolute pervert. I was like, can you just come with me? And like, I'm sure they won't mind, but I just like, don't want to go in alone because I felt intimidated.
To the stall?
No, as in like, walking in.
There wasn't a urinal in front of everyone.
No, it was like in the stall. But then I was like,
If that was happening,
yes.
In the bathroom with urinals.
Yes.
But there was like, 30 to 50 feral women behind.
Feral women? They weren't feral.
Like feral, you know, like feral hogs. That's the name I was referencing. Would you use the urinal?
I don't think. I think they'd have to give a screen.
They're all stood in front of
the Excuse me, ladies. Excuse me, ladies.
Got to do some business here, ladies.
No, I think it probably. splash. I think I'd still use the stall. What would you do?
Yeah, I think you'd like to think you used the stall. I think drunk me would probably be like, I'm entitled to do this.
Sorry, ladies.
Normalize it. Normalize me pissing.
I'm fine with
this. This is woke now.
Ignore the colour, ladies, and the smell.
This is Keir Starmer's Britain.
I've never drank water. Mostly solids, they say.
My doctor told me I'm at risk of death. Just a kidney stone. Nothing to worry about.
Can I squeeze your hand? Oh my god.
Me in the gender neutral toilet getting out my gallstone.
Squeezing it like a tube of toothpaste.
I hope this is the episode that bloke from The Spectator I was talking to earlier listens to. I hope it's this one.
I think you'll enjoy it.
I think you'll like the podcast.
We have never had it so good.
It's the Politics Show cast.
So Ed, tell me about getting into gender neutral toilet maxing. What does that involve? What does that
mean? That's when you use it really efficiently, like we've just done.
Yes.
So journalist Ben Zand, in an episode for Channel 4's Life Uncovered, was investigating the world of trans maxers, which is essentially when you're an incel and you transition to being a woman because you want to have sex. And so I had caught up with him last week and made a conversation about his documentary.
And just before we listen to that, maxing is sort of a community. It exists beyond just being trans, right? You can max other things.
Yeah, so it comes from like the idea of like when you have a video game character, like say a World of Warcraft character, and you maximize your stats. It's like you enhance your stats to play the game better. And then so there's lux maxing, which can take quite... So it goes on a scale from like going to the gym to get bigger muscles and look better to like jaw hammering to get a better jawline and leg lengthening surgery, which is like they break your legs at an infinite amount of times, and not infinite, presumably there's a limit. And so they grow.
Be careful with your language. If you and then there's a red room that they make you go.
So it's the idea of improving. It's like an incel term for going out of your way to do something to improve your life in some way. There's also SEA maxing, which is going to Southeast Asia maxing, which is going to Southeast Asia for sex tourism.
Is there an argument that the trans maxing community are being used by the Telegraph to explain what just
it's not
the other yeah
that's what I think we discussed this in it, but the incels and that kind of alt-right fandom or community rather, they like prank each other. They do things. There's a trans maxing manifesto, which is one of the most ludicrous things I've ever. It's like 100 pages
manifesto.
Yeah, it's worth the read. And one of them is standing in Rochdale. But there's the
only manifesto you've ever read.
Yeah, it's the most important. But there's things.
And the Unabomber.
But there's But there's elements of it, like they suggest that if you transmax in Ukraine, one of the benefits is you would be conscripted.
You wouldn't be.
Yeah, because you'd be a woman. And so it's also, it's a really interesting dynamic in kind of gender identity, in that they don't, they're not like, we're trans women, like we're still guys, which look like girls. They're not terribly charitable.
But
to
isn't
the
repercussion for like the punishment for not, for failing to turn up to conscription, isn't it like you become a social pariah and like you have to leave the country, like, you know, you're not allowed to be there, or you'd go to prison or whatever. How would transitioning help you in that situation? Because surely you would then still be the person who didn't do conscription, but instead of saying, oh, because he didn't want to go, they go because...
They were transmaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really think anyone... I would really doubt anyone in Ukraine has actually done it. And I don't think the anonymous author was...
As the bombs rained but down also, but on Kyiv's gender clinic.
This
there
is...
are like 20 blokes outside waiting.
Did you know that your money, taxpayer money, is going to a Tavistock, Ukraine? Tavistock, Kyiv?
I can't wait to read about this on Unheard.
Yeah. So... This is my chat with Ben. Ben Zant, welcome to Politics Joe.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming in. How would you introduce yourself before I probably butcher it?
I'm a documentary maker. Simple, yeah. Journalist and documentary maker. I like to uncover the more difficult sides of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speak to interesting folks.
That's a good way of putting it. And you speak to very interesting people in your series Life Uncovered, and it's particularly in your episodes about transmaxers.
Mm-hmm.
Which wasn't, it sounds, I doubt the audience would be familiar with what transmaxing is. What is transmaxing?
I mean, I suppose from how I've interpreted it, it's a it's an extension of luxmaxing, which mm-hmm. I'm also making a documentary about. And it's kind of this idea that you're trying to kind of become the upscaling yourself in some way, and either by some people will redefine their jaw, or they'll, you know, if they're going to soft max, they'll go to the gym, something quite simple to try and change their opinion. I mean, their appearance to be the kind of, you know, most attractive version of themselves. Transmaxing kind of takes that and says, okay, well, you know, there's a kind of manifesto that, you know, and the idea is, well, some men are actually just more attractive as women. So they might not feel like a woman, or, you know, have gender dysmorphia or kind of sensibility that they were born in the wrong body. They just think that they actually genetically are more attractive physically as a woman. So they're a man that starts to kind of transition to be a woman solely for kind of sexual reasons.
And they talk about the other benefits that can be reaped from being a woman, one of which was cheaper car insurance.
Yeah, cheaper car insurance. Yeah, yeah. And
the manifesto is worth a read for those interested in it as well. As a point of curiosity, not as a handbook, I would say. But it's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, and people buying you cheaper drinks at a bar was one of them, for example. That kind of, I suppose, really stereotypical kind of male-female roles, the kind of manifesto suggests that, you know, should you kind of transition as a woman, you'll kind of get those benefits, and although you might not feel like a woman, in most cases they don't. It actually, the manifesto specifically says, you know, it's not for people who feel as though they're in the wrong body. It's for people who kind of want to game the system, which is obviously very controversial.
It seems to discredit trans identity at all in that sense. I think it seems to, like, this is a choice and we're doing it for our benefits. And I think a trans colleague watched it and was like, this completely alienates, or the existence of this transmaxing ideology, they found quite, they took it as an affront to their identity. And they also, I think it's such a bizarre thing, because you can't get really wrap your head around why someone would take such extreme steps for such kind of incremental gains. How did you come across the ideology?
From making a film about incels. Mm-hmm. I think we spoke about that film.
Yeah.
I'm also making a documentary about luxmaxing, which we kind of briefly covered. It's kind of like, you know, going down the rabbit hole and just kind of finding one thing and then finding another thing and then finding another thing. You know, through luxmaxing, through the incel doc I made, you know, there was a guy in that who kind of was hammering his face, and he was kind of mewing and putting his tongue in specific positions in his mouth to try and change his jawline. And some people get leg lengthening done, and you know, and one aspect of that is like is the idea that kind of some men kind of can't really look smacks because maybe they are smaller, or they have more feminine tones, or and for them to kind of, you know, become their more supreme self, it's actually better for them to just look like a woman, because they'll get actually better sexual interactions in that way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, it's a kind of very, it's controversial because of that idea, which is that it's not saying transition because, you know, so you feel like a woman, or this is something, you know, that you've struggled with. It's purely a kind of, you know, tactical move to say that I'm going to have more opportunity in my love life by looking like a woman.
So in your documentary, you go and visit a transmaxer called Sammy. What did you expect a transmaxer to be like, and what did Sammy meet those expectations?
So I expected a transmaxer to be kind of somebody who was completely Machiavellian and was just kind of, I suppose, slightly, maybe, I don't know, taking the mick out of it, or I don't know, odious in some way. I'd say Sammy wasn't. I quite liked them. You know, we spent time together. They seemed like somebody, as many of these, I suppose, more conspiratorial ideas that come into the world, who was just kind of misguided, or perhaps using it as a kind of, maybe they were on their own trans journey and they were kind of using this as their reasoning. You know, it's so complicated. There's a kind of scene within the film where we go through the kind of trans maxing manifesto, which is wild, you know. Yeah. As you said, you know, read it, and the kind of points in it are just, even like the testimony in it of like, yeah, you know, there's a bit in the film where I'm kind of laughing my head off, and it's not, I'm not laughing at anything beyond, it's just absurd. You know, it's a guy who's talking about the fact that he's really, you know, I think he's small, he's got like a tiny penis, mm-hmm, you know, that's how kind of specific it is. He's got like a micro penis, and that was the kind of decision making, is that if I have a micro penis and I'm small, then it makes sense for me to become a woman. That's the only option I have because I'm more feminine.
There was a hierarchy of options for incels, basically. And the transmaxing manifesto, you'd expect to say number one choice is, it ranges from the best case thing, the best thing you can do is medically transition to being a woman, and then the worst option is suicide. And in between those, there's like sex crimes, zoophilia, etc., which I think really shows the headspace of the author.
It does. And I think like it shows the headspace of that world, which, like, you know, I kind of found this when doing the incel doc as well, which is like, it is just actually quite upsetting a lot of the time, because like it's loads of men who are trying to kind of find themselves, trying to find their place in the world. And they kind of, you know, often don't have a huge amount of friends in the real world and a huge amount of interaction, and they find themselves on these forums, and the forums start telling them that they have the answers to the world's problems. Mm. And there are these really extreme kind of solutions that make absolutely no sense. And yeah, quite often it's either do this insanely radical thing or kill yourself. And it's like, they're the only option you have. Your life is just over already unless you kind of take these paths. And it is tricky, you know, for me to get my head around.
And if you don't have a strong social network in real life to tell you that, then it just reinforces, if everyone on your community, if all the anonymous people you're communicating with are telling you these are the only two options, and there's no one in reality that you can speak to, a romantic partner, a close friend, you maybe don't have the best relationship with your family, you can see how you can empathize with like how people get themselves into these headspaces.
Totally, yeah. And I think, I mean, I always try and come at it from a point of empathy. Like, I'm not actually going in there to ruin lives at all. You know, it's actually the opposite. I'm trying to say, look, these people exist. They kind of operate on the fringes of society. They think that they're onto something. You know, first of all, are they? You know, let's talk to them about it. And then secondly, if not, why are they thinking like this? And I'd say, yeah, quite often it's like they're lost. And because they spend so much time in these forums, they've actually, and they don't have kind of positive role models around them, or they don't have people that they can actually talk to, they're not going to therapy, they actually just lose grip on reality. And I've had it where I'm actually with somebody and they're telling me a version of the world that is just patently not true if you look around. And then they get so upset because you won't kind of conform to that idea. And they don't get upset in a way that, you know, they're trying to have an argument with you. They get upset in a way that they truly believe it, you know, mm-hmm. because they've been so brainwashed into thinking that way. And then when you don't kind of take on board what they're saying, it's kind of like the house of cards is crashing down and they're so upset about it. So it's just, yeah, it's really sad.
Really sad. I was going to come onto this later, but there is all these phenomena. Like, people talk about a crisis of masculinity. I think there was a piece in a newspaper today on the day of filming about why young men are right-wing or turning to right-wing ideologies or extreme ideologies, like Andrew Tate's the most popular person in the world. There's incels, there's trans maxers, there's looks maxers. Why do you think there is this crisis of people? Because I think, well, 40 years ago, people didn't have these, your role model would have been, I don't know, someone in The Cure or somebody. It wouldn't be like an anonymous person who'd written a 100-page manifesto. Do you think, how much do you think these online communities play into it? And do you think there's a solution to this? Do you think there's a balm to this?
I mean, I think I think there's a lack of kind of direction for a lot of people. I think there's like, you know, a lot of people feel very lonely and they feel disconnected from the wider world. And they're not entirely sure of what direction their lives should take. And they don't have kind of positive role models en masse. They just have kind of social media influencers a la Andrew Tate or somebody kind of offering them like a get rich quick scheme and telling them that the kind of secret to manliness is to be strong and aggressive and to kind of make trillions of dollars. And the reality is, you know, that's very difficult to achieve. I think for a long time, I think a lot of men have been told by, you know, that they are being, you know, kind of pushed to the side and criticized and kind of they feel out of place. And I feel in the absence of a clear direction, they are finding, you know, individuals like Andrew Tate. I think that well, there's a solution to it. I mean, for me, the solution is like to just have my own kind of principles and values. You know, I read a lot of Stoicism and I look at kind of like, you know, back in ancient Rome, they had philosophy of life schools where you'd kind of look at who you want to be and what you want to be. And like my philosophy is trying to just, you know, be a nice guy, leave people's lives better than how I kind of entered them and kind of, you know, treat people well. And I think like, but I don't know how you roll that out on a kind of a wider scale. I just know that the answer isn't kind of falling deep into internet hellholes. Yeah. You know, I think like it's about kind of community and reconnection. I think like obviously there's a lot of mental health issues that people don't address. And instead of actually seeking out help, they'll seek out some random person on the internet who's just chats a bit of poo, you know. I'd actually say that is a major problem, which is, you know, people are disconnected because they're on the internet a lot.
Yeah.
They don't have, you know, huge social circles. Maybe they've left school and they haven't got people around them. They then start to feel, you know, down and depressed and they have issues. And instead of seeking out actual support, such as therapy, you know, men's mental health is something that's spoken out a lot, you know, like, or talking to people openly and having like an actual space to do that, they instead dive into the internet. And usually it'll start with like one Google of like, why do I feel like this? And it might be one bit of support because they found a forum on Discord or something or whatever that people are saying, I also feel like this. So there's that kind of sense of, I now feel, you know, I feel a shared sense of belonging. But the problem is the next stage beyond that is, well, actually the way you feel, the reason you feel like that is actually because you're just not attractive enough. It's not because you have, you know, some unaddressed issue from your childhood that makes you feel, you know, abandonment or whatever. Mm. It's actually just because your physical appearance isn't quite right. Mm. So if you do these things, then you'll feel fine. And they fall into that conspiracy. And then it kind of extends into a whole other world, which is actually, well, men and women have specific roles. You need to fill that role as a man. Mm. And then it just gets darker and darker and darker. So I think people need to address their problems prior to going down this route.
It's interesting as well, because incels, or people within the incel universe, I guess, it's always about I'm not attractive because I'm 5'2", overweight, I'm spotty, or whatever. But lots of my friends are very nice people. They might not be the most handsome person in the world, but they're sexually active because they're nice people. They're friendly. It's something like, there should be like a crusade of someone to go into every incel forum and just say, just be nicer, and you might get laid.
Yeah, because I mean, I suppose
self-pity and wallowing.
I mean, there is, I suppose, there's two things to this. One is that there is data that proves that if you're more attractive, life is a bit easier.
Yeah.
That's true. But then I think they take that and just take it too far, because I've met many incels,
yeah.
and they are not ugly.
Yeah.
You know, they're like good-looking people, mm-hmm. quite often, you know. And I think like, it's like, as you said, if you're somebody who's got, you know, who's trying hard, they've got their stuff together, you're trying to build something, you have a kind of growth mindset and you're trying to, you know, address your issues, people will respond to that and mm-hmm. you'll find love eventually. And you're actually, if you actually put yourself out there, and quite often with incels, you meet them and it's like, they're not, you know, they're not engaging with the outside world. They're not going outside. They're trying things like looks-maxing or trans-maxing instead of just actually meeting people. And then they can't quite connect the fact that if you're not going out meeting people, making an effort, then obviously you're not going to have mm-hmm. any interactions with people. So it's not, it's kind of like it was a non-starter because you never actually made that effort in the first place. And it's kind of easier to fall into the forums in a way.
Yeah, I suppose, because if they turn up looking like Chad, they've looks-maxed to the nth degree, they've got their chiseled jawline, they've got done their leg lengthening, and then they've got no chat, or they've got like,
yeah.
all they've got to talk about is their looks maxing and leg lengthening surgery.
Yeah, and it's like a mask, isn't it? It's like, yeah. you know, if you, you know, it might work for a few seconds, but you kind of just need to work on yourself and kind of, as you said, get the chat. And the chat isn't like some Andrew Tate style chat where like you talk in a really specific way and everyone's going to love you. It's just like, just learning to interact with people in like a, you know, reasonable way,
yeah.
in which you're not kind of trying to screw them over and they're not trying to screw you over, and you're just being genuine, you know. It's like, and that's the thing, which is like, they don't want to be themselves because they don't like themselves,
mm-hmm.
But they're nice people underneath mm-hmm. the conspiracy. That's the thing, is like, and it's not that I'm saying I'm not like advocating for incels. I'm just saying like, they're just quite often, there's troubled young people.
Yeah.
Vulnerable,
who are, very vulnerable.
And really vulnerable, who have fell into these horrible ideologies. Mm-hmm. Like with anybody, you know, I spend my life meeting kingpins and drug lords and criminals. It's quite often similar. It's similar. Mm-hmm. These are like kind of people who come from really troubled backgrounds who have just fallen into this thing. And like, and they've now started to assume that that's the only way they can live, and everyone around them thinks like that, and they've lost grip. It's, yeah. So it's, I mean, how you pull them back is another question, and I don't know.
It's also the anonymity of the inceldom and the manifestos. Like, I think about like QAnon. Q's just a guy. Q's just a guy who made up QAnon.
Mm.
And I wonder if, with the Transmaxing Manifesto, it could well just be a prank by like a malicious actor who's written all this and said they could have completely, because the author's anonymous, the author's name is Vertiligo or something like that. And then you've, say you go along with it, and then you're trapped in the wrong body, all because someone online said it would make you feel happier. The cost of it are quite remarkable.
No, they are, and I think, you know, it's you know, I suppose whether or not there's a whole conversation around this kind of that has become a major culture war issue. Mm-hmm. But I think in this instance, these aren't people who are saying that they're born in the wrong body. You know, they're people who are saying that they didn't feel attractive as a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, like, as you said, the struggle with all these things is like, it could just be a bit of a prank, you know, like, because there's so much of that kind of trolling within these forums. Or it could have been someone in a really bad place themselves, who is just kind of regurgitating all of the kind of horrible thoughts that they were told from other people. They've put it into this thing that makes it look official. It seems like a step-by-step plan.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, where does that end up? You know, like, what are the consequences? And, you know, I think, you know, the other side of it is that, and I think maybe this is kind of maybe Sammy's story, or at least part of it, which is, I think some people can use it as part of their actual story of you know, feeling as though they were in the wrong body, you know? And I think, like, you know, and that was the question I had whilst making it, was like, are these kind of, are they men who are just pretending to be women to get sexual gratification? Mm. Are they people who are actually, who feel trans, but kind of can't admit it, and they're using this as a cover? And I guess it's very difficult to know.
Yeah, I think that was the, from watching it, I kind of got the impression that Sammy was using it as a crutch on their own journey, I suppose. And I kind of think, I think regardless of what the, like, black pilled you are, or red pilled, or whatever level of pilled you are as an incel, to go through the actual procedures involved requires such a deep level of brainwashing. I do think it'd be very hard to do that if you didn't have some level of gender dysphoria. And also, I think the manifesto is incredibly dishonest about the experience of being a trans woman in this country, regardless of whether or not you are a trans maxer, you will be perceived as a trans woman, and trans women face a hugely disproportionate amount of violence. They're stigmatized. And there's also that element of it as well, which I think is dangerous for the trans maxers themselves for putting themselves in that situation, perhaps unnecessarily. And I also think it could be dangerous for trans people, because trans maxing as an ideology, if someone is aware of that identity, any trans woman can therefore be accused of being, oh, you're not real. You're not a real woman, you're a trans maxer. Was that something that you had in mind when you were...
Yeah, and I think, you know, it was definitely a show we thought a lot about, and I think it's kind of controversial in every possible way. Mm. You know, it's kind of offensive to women, because it's the idea that, like, life's just easier as a woman.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, you just like... which, you know, many people would... make some very strong cases for why that's not true.
Through the comments will be.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's kind of, as you said, it's kind of problematic for the trans community, because, you know, people could then use that as a kind of, to write off their experience. So I think it's obviously tricky. I think everything I do is tricky and really difficult. And obviously we have to think about, why are we doing this? And I think at the end of the day, I'm a guy who believes that, you know, these things exist, and they are growing in the darkest depths of the internet. And kind of challenging them and exposing them is the best way to kind of address it. And you can pretend loads of things don't exist, but they do. Mm. And it doesn't matter just because you pretend they don't. So I think there's a value in it. And as I said, you know, I see my role in this really as I try not my best to not have any opinions. You know, sometimes I may seem as though I do. I really try not to in these scenarios. At the end of the day, it's just like, people live their lives in a trillion ways. You know, it's like, I'm not certain about which ones are correct, but, like, I'm trying to be like the kind of middle ground, the kind of just back and forth. I'm always trying to be the devil's advocate in those scenarios. And I think there's actually a big audience for that at the moment, because everything is so freaking polarized. You just have loads of people pretending they know what they're talking about, and they don't, because, you know, they haven't really experienced the world. So it's like, I'm not actually pretending I know what I'm talking about. I don't at all. I'm just trying to be somebody who can, like, elicit some information from somebody, kind of challenge them a little bit, and then say to the audience, all right, take it as you will, you know. Like, my tagline on, I think, on social media is, like, I make documentaries and then people send me offensive messages on the internet.
I can actually relate
which
to
is
that,
basically exactly what happens each time. But quite often also you do get a lot of messages saying, oh, wow, this has raised my, you know, I didn't know this existed.
Yeah. Is there anything that you particularly want to cover that you haven't been able to yet? You spent some time in some interesting company. Do you have, like, a white whale of a community or a person that you'd love to spend some time with?
Well, we've just made one about psychics that actually came out yesterday, which was, like, a big topic. I like kind of mystics and psychics is something I'm always really interested in. I just think, I mean, for me, like, masculinity, conspiracies, kind of supernatural, like, that will always be what I want to do in the trillion guises that it kind of comes out, you know what I mean? There's not any kind of specific thing. There's loads of things that I'd love to do, and just kind of, really, it's people that I want to meet. That's kind of usually how it works. I'll see somebody and be like, I really would love to know why they think that's correct. Mm. You know, like religion's fascinating to me, like an extreme religion, like Scientology and all that. You know, it's just very interesting how you get people who believe really hardcore things genuinely, you know, and I think it's like meeting those people who are convinced that they have the secret to the world's ills. And I'm just like, okay, I mean, like, tell me about it. Like, if, and I say this in the psychic film that's just come out, you know, I say to the guy, like, if you can actually talk to dead people, that's like absolutely incredible. You know, that will literally change the foundation of existence. So it's like, if you can,
it settle every argument.
I know, it'd be amazing. So it's like, and I know a lot of people truly believe they can. So it's like, if you can, that's amazing. So I kind of go into it like, please convince me, because I don't know why I'm here. You know, I don't know the meaning of life. I wish I did. Yeah. I've been searching for it my whole life. I can't figure it out. So loads of people think they do. So it's just like, prove it to me. And if you can, I am an acolyte. You know, I will follow you. I'm your disciple for the rest of time. Up until this point, they haven't, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yet.
I never thought about how small time mediums are. Or being like, they just do like stage shows. Yeah. You know, like at the UN, being like,
I know, exactly.
Like, I've spoken to Nelson Mandela.
If you had that actual capacity.
Superpower, you could solve every world conflict.
Literally everything. Yeah, yeah. You know, and it's like, and I always, it's the thing where it's like, I suppose the difficulty is just like, nothing is that simple, is it? You know, there's nothing that is just like, yes, I now have the answer.
Yeah.
Because everything's so convoluted. And I always think when you see somebody, transmaxes as well, like who's purporting to have the answer, really simple thing. Okay, just, you know, become a woman. Even though you feel you're actually a man and you feel like a man, and then your answers will be solved. It's obviously not correct. You know, the world's more complicated than that. There isn't just a kind of golden bullet that just says, cool, this is it, you know?
Yeah. Well, on that note, should we leave it there?
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Benzan, thanks for coming in and congrats on the documentary. Available thanks. On Channel 4 now.
Well, Ed, that sure was fascinating.
Listen to all 20 minutes of it.
Just like that.
More.
The magic of editing, baby. We've just been sat here in silence for 20 minutes.
Again. You were pissing yourself. Screeching.
If, like, in a hypothetical universe, if one farted paint, what would one piss?
Shit.
Primer.
Undercoat. Okay, cool. I think we'll wrap things up, shall we?
The brush. You piss the brush.
Do we think that the memes in the subreddit will be about fart painting or about you with like a mane of hair, you in the 80s?
I think it's going to be quite a lot of pissing content.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be... Ava, what do you think?
I hope there's a lot of pissing content.
I think it's going to be mostly piss. I think that was the most... It's interesting because sometimes just we do an episode and we all think, oh, they're going to do this. And then it's something completely different.
So what do you think it will be? Pissing?
I think pissing's going to be my highlight of this.
There's a really good Instagram account called Scenic Pisses. I don't know if you're aware of it.
I'm familiar.
Yeah, where it's shot sort of central of waistline. You don't see any penis, but you see the stream. But it'll just be like into the Grand Canyon or like
sick
on the side of a mountain. Strong recommend.
That's good stuff.
Not a brush in sight.
No.
Okay.
But Simon, what's his name, is there?
Just peering around a tree.
No, he's 18, mate.
Thanks very much for listening. We will see you on the next one.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.